Strange Radio. Your trusted source for the paranormal, conspiracy theory, and true crime.
Coming to you live from the Mistopheles Studios, it's Dark Fringe Radio.
All I'm offering is the truth, nothing more.
You're the disease, and I'm the cure.
That is power.
And welcome to Dark Fringe Radio. I am your host, Will Martinez. Thank you all so much for joining us on another adventure here at Dark Fringe Radio. Tonight, we have a very special guest. We're going to be interviewing a person. Her name is Sophia Stewart, and she is known as the owner and creator of the Matrix and Terminator series. And we're going to get into all of her historical, how she became a writer, how she came up with this series, how she got the rights back. It's a really interesting story. So please, guys, stick around for much more of that here to come. But before we get into that, first, I want to remind everybody how you can listen to the podcast. Very simple. You can go to our website, darkfringeradio.com. Go right there, and you'll find everything that you need as far as the paranormal, conspiracy theory, and true crime is concerned on that webpage. It has all our archives, all our shows. So make sure you go there and check it out. And, of course, our YouTube channel, darkfringeradio.com. Make sure you go there, like, and subscribe to all our stuff there. All our latest episodes are there. So please make sure you check us out there and like and subscribe. And hit the bell notification to also get notified when a new episode comes out. So besides that, we're going to get started here on our very, very interesting interview with Sophia Stewart, the owner and creator of the Terminator and Matrix series, here in a second. Welcome to Dark Fringe Radio. I'm your host, Will Martinez, and of course, joined tonight with me, of course, my co-host, Jay Galosi. Jay, we have a very special guest tonight. Her name is Miss Sophia Stewart. She's
an author. No, Miss.
Excuse me.
No, I'm a married Mrs. woman, and my married name is not Stewart.
Okay. Let's make sure we clarify that. Mrs.
Get that right, dude.
That's right.
I don't know where y'all get Mrs. I was a name that he missed. My name is Sophia Stewart.
Okay. All right. Well, Miss Sophia Stewart is with us tonight.
Yeah, Sophia.
And that's right. And she is the author, screenwriter, and scholar producer of so much work. And we're going to get into your background and how you are the owner and creator of the Matrix and the Terminator series. Now, people are not really familiar with this, on certain levels, because, your story really hasn't been put out there in the mainstream media. I'm going to ask you about that here in a minute, too, and the reasons why you think that it hasn't happened that way. But tell me a little bit about your background. Tell me a little about your journey as a writer and a creator.
Well, I'm from New York. I'm a New Yorker. I'm from New York City, the boogie down called the Bronx, of course, and Manhattan.
Yeah.
I also want to let you know, I've been in the media since 1979, actually, or 1980s, we'll say, since the 80s onwards up until now. My story got broken by ABC, and it went viral, actually, October 17, 2003, and I have never stopped interviewing. I've done over 5,000 media interviews and magazines, newspapers. I'm on the cover of some London magazines and so forth. Yeah, so it's 8 billion people, so every day somebody's going to wake up and hear about me, but I am out there with magazines, podcasts, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, no, that's the reason why we had you on tonight, and we wanted to spread this information and make sure that, more people are enlightened and aware of things that are going on. So, your journey as a creator and a writer got you to a particular part, a point in your life around, the 1980s, where you wrote this book,
in the
correct?
80s. In the 80s, I was at USC.
Yes.
I'm a Trojan. I went to school with Marcus Allen, Ronnie Lott, August Curley, Dennis Johnson, James Sinclair, and the Moore brothers, and, you know, just to name a few. Reggie Bush was there also. So you're very familiar with a lot of these names because a lot of them went on to become Heisman winners. And
I'm a Niners fan, so Ronnie Lott's my guy.
Yeah, Ronnie was one of my classmates. So anytime if you know him, ask him about me. I'll give you some pictures of me at USC and my ID and everything so you can see what I look like when I was in the classrooms with them and partying with them. Parties, clubs, we all
had to be a good time.
That same circle. I went to Marcus's Heisman party. In fact, one of my boyfriend, Anthony Davis, Heisman winner, was how I, you know, come to go to USC in the first place.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, wow, that's really
interesting. Yeah, and I used to, and I used to work for a Beverly Hills law firm. I used to also work for the actor, Oscar winner, Lou Gossett Jr.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I used to work
Officer
for
and Gentleman, also. One of my favorite movies.
One of my favorites.
Yeah. Incredible. We're still friends to this day. Very incredible. Very nice employer, or, you know, at that time.
Awesome. Yeah. So you also had a kind of like a discovery in the 80s with a certain family that's very prolific in mainstream music, media, everything you could probably say, but tell me a little bit about your history and your background with the Jackson family.
Oh, the Jacksons are the ones who discovered me. I did Janet Jackson's first feature film scripts in the 80s. Yeah, and it was really kind of weird because I knew a lot of celebrities. And like I told you, I was in the media because I was engaged to marry Muhammad Ali, the late Muhammad Ali. And he was super. I mean, in the 80s, he was this super, superstar. And I was in the media with him. I was with him from 1980 to 1983. So, you know, I was meeting, he was introducing me to all kinds of celebrities, directors, producers, and incredible people. Whenever he walked in a room, I mean, I don't care how many celebrities are in there with their fan base, everybody would leave and come to this man. He was incredible. I'm serious.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So
I'm sure he was like, yeah, he had that aura about him, right?
Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
He was much way older than myself, but he always had younger women.
Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, that was nothing. I think his second wife was like 17 years old when he married her.
Oh, wow. You know? Interesting.
Not unheard of to be with younger women. And he was 38 at the time. And I thought, wow, that is really super old. You know, because when you're really young.
Now you're making me feel
old. Amazing how that changes, isn't it?
Well, no, you know, when you're really young and, you know, a certain age, you think that, wow, that's really old. But in reality, now perspective is not. But, you know, at that time, you know, we were all young, Marcus, and they were just clowns, you know, they were clowning and everything. And Ronnie had this little raggedy car. He used to give me rides home and stuff like that. It was just, we never knew that we were going to grow up to be rich and famous. You know, you never think that, except for Marcus.
Marcus.
Marcus was an exception. Let me tell you, Marcus was telling me, I'm going to be the next Heisman winner. And of course he was, you know, I didn't take him serious, but he was. I went to his Heisman party and everything, you know.
That's awesome. That's amazing. So you had this amazing, you know, experience as a young woman getting into, you know, Hollywood pretty much and having all these, you know, luminaries around you. Where did this, I know that you always had this passion for writing and journalism and all this. But
let me tell you where it all began, because that's where you should ask. Where did it all begin?
Yes.
Do you know it all began when I was in grade school? Because, you know, I'm a prodigy. So I skipped high school. I didn't even need it. Took the New York Regents and went into college, got the degree. In fact, that when I was at SC, I was in grad school. You know what I'm talking about? I already had a degree and everything and started writing The Matrix. But my inspiration came from God and seeing Star Wars in the late 70s when Star Wars first came out, because I used to go to the Apollo Theater all the time. And Star Wars was on the, you know, up there on the market. Yeah. And it was like, well, what is this? You know, and going in there and seeing it, Star Wars just gave me a reminiscing, because I had read the Bible. And it was like the wars in heaven, you know, and Darth Vader, the devil. So I thought about, well, what about the second coming of the Christ? Because in Revelations, it said he was going to come back. And I said, well, what happens when he comes back? Because in the first time he comes, there's that story in the Bible, but there's no story what happens when he comes in the future. But I wrote that story, what happens when he comes in the future. The machines would be like enslaving mankind. And now let's go back further. When I was in grade school, one of our teachers got sick, and she taught English. And this college professor who taught writing substituted for her. And he told us, you know, we got in front of the class, he said, well, I don't know anything about English, but I'm going to teach you guys how to write. And so that's when we began our writing journey, you know, just like Venus and Serena playing tennis, Michael Jordan playing basketball, you know, in grade school, Tiger Woods playing golf when he's, you know, 3 years old. And, you know, you become a master. You have to start early. And then plus, I have this unusual history. I was mentored by the Illuminati's when I was 7, 8, and 9 years old. Not the 13 families that you guys know with the Roth, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, the DuPonts, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Because some of the Rothschilds are big fans of mine. They have contacted me, Masons.
Well, it's funny you said that, because in your book, The Third Eye, there's a group of people that it's kind of like the Rockefellers, but they're not. They're kind of like
Rockefellers. I did was, since I knew about the Illuminati's in the 80s, way early before the 80s when I was a kid, because the Rosicrucian branch is called the Christ branch. They mentored me 7, 8, and 9 years old. I knew who they were and everything. When they came and contacted me, I knew, you know what I'm saying? And so they start teaching me a lot of the mysticism, you know, the metaphysics. I knew about technology, all of this stuff, you know, they're just rounding out my whole life, you know. But now I'm a prolific writer, but I was already writing prolifically at 3 years old, because my bloodlines, bloodlines is Portuguese and Cherokee. I have native blood and I have Portuguese blood on both mother and father's side, because my grandfather, he couldn't speak any English. He came from Portugal. My grandmother came off of the Indian reservations of Missouri, could not speak a lick of English at all. And they created a language when they got married to communicate, which is really kind of strange, because when our clan get together, our tribe get together, we are communicating, but other people who are outsiders, they don't even know what we're speaking about. Because we all, being kids and family, we all learn this language that we're speaking, you know, to understand each other, but outsiders don't even know. And it blew my mind, because I thought they knew what we were saying, but they did not.
Interesting. Well, now we have this interesting background. You've had, you know, obviously this great gift since a child, you know, and you've now have evolved it now into something, into now a book that you wrote in the early 80s, which is The Third Eye.
Yeah, but this is going to blow your mind.
Please.
My copyrights are 81, 83, and 84. Terminator did not come out to October the 26th, 1984. My copyrights is February the 6th, 84, and the other ones is 81, May the 1st, 81, and then 83. So my copyrighted books and scripts were already out and published, and people had them way before these movies ever was even heard of. Matrix did not come out until March the 31st, 1999. So you got to realize that I was writing Matrix and Terminator while I'm at USC, but when my work came out, you see, they got a hold of my book, and they got hold of my copyrighted script and copyrighted book. I sent it to the studios. I mean, I have the letters of proof. The FBI were blown away, because they had never fantasized that someone could keep letters from the 80s.
From the early 80s. Yeah, who does that?
Yeah, who does that? That blew their mind. And you know what else blew their mind? I knew how to copyright and trademark my own work. I'm an attorney. But I have a gift in law, and but I also have a degree in law because I studied to be a lawyer and a doctor because I wanted to help people. So I'm very prolific in law, prolific in meds and all that, you know, medical doctor. I know all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I had these gifts. So when my grandmother, she couldn't read or write, and you couldn't fool her. She would have me to write letters for her when I was 3 years old and read them back. I had to read it back, and you cannot fake it. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm talking about? But it was something like I knew the words, I knew the vocabulary, and I had these famous teachers. I guess you guys don't know Max Siegel, famous journalist with the New York Times, yes. Emile Kapulia, essay critic, author of books. You know what I'm saying? Big mm-hmm. Apple playwright Paul Cherry. You know, Leon Roth, R-O-T-H, Roth, his son is Eric Roth that wrote, you know, Forrest Gump and Benjamin right. Buttons.
Benjamin
and
Button, I was gonna
he,
say,
yeah, yeah, and he won an Oscar for Airport 79. So these were my teachers, and they were like blown away by my writing. I'm talking about really blown away. And I thought that my writing was just so simple. I was like, why are they going crazy over my writing? It's just simple. You know what I'm saying? And Muhammad Ali himself, he went like completely crazy over my writing too. He's like, he was like, oh my God, did you write this? Did you write this? And I said, yeah. And he would, you know, have it framed in his mansion, and people would, you know, tell me, but I've been to his mansion also, but they would tell me it was framed on the walls before I even, you know, went to his mansion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I didn't know that my gift was so phenomenal. You know, it was just simple to me.
Yeah, it seemed like second nature to you.
Yeah, and because, you know, people would say to me, well, where did you research this information? Where did you, mm-hmm. I said, it comes in within, mm-hmm. within, inside of me, and it comes out of me. Even when I speak, you know, I can speak to scientists, doctors, anyone, and I don't need any script. I don't need to have a book. I don't even reference any books or something. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It is a natural gift that comes out of me, and I know how everything is set up. I know the order of the universe, the orders of numbers, that the universal language is mathematic. It's not words or spells or spelling. Mm-hmm. That's witchcraft. That's teaching witchcraft in school. And I knew that they were teaching witchcraft because when we create with numbers, so if you know math, and the more math you know, the greater creator you will become. Mm-hmm. And prodigies are like these kids that are, you know, 12 years old, a little girl, she gets her degree and she go work for NASA. Mm-hmm. Do you see what I'm talking about? Because she's a polymath. She's a polymath, meaning she knows many maths. She can crack the codes. I crack the codes. And that's what a prodigy is all about. You know, when you have your architects that's building the buildings and the bridges, and you have your engineers that are creating the cars and mechanical things, you know, and factories, we're all versed in math. And the more math and more incredible you are with math, the greater creator you are, like Tesla. Tesla, I mean,
this 369 guy, theory, right?
Yes, he and Leonardo da Vinci and Einstein, we're talking about mathematical prodigies. They're not just, they're beyond geniuses, because people like to call us geniuses, but prodigies are, we do remote reviewing. We are on a higher frequency.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jay, you got to follow up sure. that?
Yeah, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, I mean, I'm terrible at math, so I'm not a fan of numbers necessarily as far as additions and subtractions are per se. I do enjoy some pool, so I like angles. I like looking at things from different angles. Pool. I like seeing things from a different plane. I like seeing things from, yeah, but when it comes to the numbers, I do create. I also have written, I'm creating a comic book story as Will and I are working on a role-playing thing together. I have a lot of things I'm working on, and math is just not one of them for me. So I do enjoy hearing how everybody gets inspired and how the creative process is for everyone. And I have to be honest, until Will and I starts speaking about you, recently. Willa kind of introduced me to your story. So I've been really enjoying listening to how it all kind of came to be. And I do appreciate, I like the way you're explaining your story and how the robots, the third eye, there are things that I hadn't heard. So I'm really enjoying that part. I just, numbers, man. I'm not good with
math. Well, now let me tell you something. You may have been very well versed in math or numbers, but the teachers were told to discourage a lot of the students in math. They knew that if you caught on to math or you love math, that you were going to be this great creator. But their job was to program you for 12 years, because who in the hell go to school for 12 years? It's just programming and reprogramming. Reintroducing the programs again, but at another level of consciousness to keep, you know, people enslaved.
Patterns. It's cycles and patterns.
Yeah, because if you are programmed and you are not a free thinker or you don't think outside of the box, they want to keep you asleep. They want to keep you in a program. And Matrix is, that's why
I don't fit in the box.
Unplug people out of the matrix, out of this room, out of this programming. Do you see what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense. And this is why a lot of you see, like, for instance, with Apple and stuff, you know, the one that passed away.
Jobs.
Yeah, Steve Jobs. He dropped out. Mm-hmm. A lot of them from the valley there. They dropped out because they were not getting those programs. A lot of people that dropped out, they became so super. There were people who dropped out and they were incredible drug dealers, but it was teaching them math. Mm-hmm. That's why they were great businessmen, because it doesn't matter if you're selling sticks out there, if you're selling drugs or you're selling sticks, you're going to be this incredible person because you're counting. You're always dealing in numbers, and that's the whole deal. Process with the brains is math.
That's right. Yeah.
Because we deal in frequencies. Do you see what I'm talking about? We deal in numbers. Look around you. Look at your license plate. That's a number. Look at your social security number. Look at your driving license. Look at your address. Look at the mail. You know, there's nothing but numbers all around us, not spells and spelling. Even if there were no words to even exist, you would still be incredible creators.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Because of math. Different form. Right.
Right.
Yeah, because of math. Because even if you're hunters, you're going out there hunting rabbits, you're hunting deer, you're still counting.
How many hours of daylight do I have?
Statistics.
Left, you know,
how much meat?
Exactly.
And those things could be identified before the spoken or written word, but numbers, knowing how many stores you had, how you could feed your kids, that came first, because you had to know how much you had and how much you needed to feed.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm working, and look, and I'm in Vegas right now, and this is the greatest capital of the world of numbers.
All about numbers.
You know,
baby.
You could become a multimillionaire overnight if you crack the codes on some of their algorithms and slot machines, and you know, the whole process is, and lotteries, it's all about math and money. And they don't want people to know this, because they don't want you cracking the codes, because you crack the codes, they're gonna be broke.
Absolutely right.
So
getting back to you know, your story here, Sophia, I mean, why hasn't this been picked up by the mainstream media as much as it should? Like,
well, it has been picked up by the mainstream media over and over, but you got to realize there's 8 billion people here.
Right.
So when it was popping, you were not even aware of it. Mm-hmm. But if you go to the archives right now, if you go to your library and go to the archives, you're going to find all these media stories on me. Mm-hmm. Are you aware of that? You're thinking in the process of internet. Right. Internet is nothing but a distribution platform with gossiping. It was never created for media. It was created to make money.
Mm.
It was never about gossiping and rumors and innuendos and stuff like that. And plus, I don't work for the cabal, so my face is not going to be plastered all over the place, because I don't work for the cabal. I work for God. Do you see what I'm talking about?
No,
if
I
I was working for the cabal, then I'd be just like Taylor Swift and Beyonce. You'll see me every second, and I wouldn't have any privacy. I wouldn't even have a life, you know, because that's what happens when you're working for the cabal, because they're making a lot of money off of you.
The cost of
that's
fame.
What it's all about.
Yeah. Now they have asked me to come and work for them, and I told them no. God made me a owner.
So you've actually had conversations with these people. You've had.
Oh yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Listen, I've had conversations with them before my story ever broke in the media.
Mm-hmm.
ABC broke my story, like I told you, October the 17th, 2003.
Right.
And it went viral. And they did two interviews with me. I went into the studio. They sent someone out, and I went into the studio. Mm-hmm. They didn't care about Warner Brothers. All they needed to see was the proof that I wrote it. And it blew their minds, and they broke the story. They said, like a billion people, it went global around the whole globe that people were finding out about me. A lot of people would come up to me, and I come from a military law enforcement family also, besides the Native and Portuguese. And so, you know, my family they're either military or law enforcement or both, either or both. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this story, it came out. It came out. A lot of people know about it. You'd be shocked. If you go on the social network now, you'd be shocked how many people know about my story and know about me. Yeah. My work won 4 Oscars, and those Oscars belong to me.
It's mainly interesting.
I didn't do a licensing deal.
That's the issue, right? That was the issue itself. And they actually came to you at, you know, we'll get into the lawsuits here in a second. I want to talk about that as well. But they've actually come to you prior to all this and tried to offer you money to kind of basically shut you up, right?
No.
No?
I don't know why people have their own assumptions, but all of the assumptions that you see on the internet, all the assumptions that people, it's just an assumption. And they need to ask me if Tesla was alive right now, you would ask him questions. You wouldn't be telling him something that you read about or heard about, people talking about him or writing about, never met the man ever. Mm-hmm. No, what happened was they never stole my work. They stole my money.
Mm.
My work was already copywritten. You know, I already owned the script. I already owned the books. I already owned everything. They were trying to buy the copyrights for $5 to $7 million. Warner Brothers offered me $5 to $7 million for the copyrights that are worth billions of dollars.
Right.
And Schwarzenegger himself planned the Terminator. He offered me $5 million for the Terminator franchise, the copyrights. And I turned them down. That was going on. Not anything that you guys were thinking.
Right. And this was many years already after, right? The fame.
No, this happened right away.
Right away, okay.
I didn't know anything about the Terminator until the FBI told me about it.
Gotcha.
See, because what happened was I saw the Matrix and I saw my work on the 65-foot screen or how big it is. And I said, well, you know, I wrote that. I told my date, but they had not bought it from me. And like I told you, I had already worked for a Beverly Hills law firm. I already had a degree in that. So I contacted their legal department. Now, this is going to blow you guys' mind. You guys need to realize something. Mm-hmm. If my work is already copywritten, it's just like you already own the, say there's a DeLorean in your yard. The DeLorean is in your name.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody steals the DeLorean out and make $1 million off the DeLorean, they didn't steal your car. They stole the money.
Right.
Because the car is yours regardless of anything. You want the damages. And I told people, I said, you don't go to court to get ownership of something. You go to court for damages. That's what court is about, money damages.
Right.
Because someone has been injured. You know what I'm talking about? And someone is deserving the money and someone is not deserving the money.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, my God, you know, because we're thinking like they stole your work. I said, no, they stole and made money off of my work.
Right. Right.
Right.
I say, but they don't own the copyrights. This is where they made the biggest mistake. And they've been knowing about me. They was waiting for me to come. They were waiting for me to come in 1984 with the Terminator, but I wasn't going to the movies at that time. Mm-hmm. And I told them I did not want to sell them my copyrights. In fact, I wanted them to stop stealing and I wanted them to go to jail. I'm sorry. I really wanted them to go to jail so they could stop stealing from people because they had stole from Paul Newman, Sylvester Stallone, their own producers, their own directors. They stole from the mob, even the mobsters, the Gambino's son. They stole his script. They even stole his damages and money. They even stole from a congressman.
Really?
They stole, yeah, they stole his script and put it, you know, put it on the screen. Lil Nas X in the company Mischief and the executives, they sit there and counterfeited Nike. I mean, come on. You already know Nike is a billion-dollar trademark copyrighted company. You know,
public. But they still went ahead and did it, right?
Yeah. Did you see? He's Lil Nas X and Mischief Company. Right. They, you know, Mischief Company is probably like a little dummy company, a holding company, holds the money. Correct. Anyway, they counterfeited a Nike, put blood on it, and sold 666,000 copies. Then Nike came after them for the damage because you can't come after somebody until they make some money.
Right.
That's another thing I told people. If someone is using something that's in the public domain and they're not making any money, they're not doing anything. But the moment you start selling it, the feds are going to come.
It becomes a whole different thing.
Oh, it's a whole nother ball game because you're counterfeiting. You're actually counterfeiting someone else's copyrighted or trademark property.
Yes. No, that's interesting. Let's get into the lawsuits, if you don't mind, real quick, and we'll just touch on them real fast. But
really, okay.
Yeah, if you don't mind, you know, we want to figure out how you became owner because, well, you know, how you always been rightful owner, but I guess in the eyes of the, you know, people that need to know or have power.
You mean the courts?
The courts, yes.
That's where everything is settled. Listen, when you win the lawsuit.
Right. Yeah, you got to go to court.
Do you know people are still arguing on the internet and still talking on the social network? And I'm like, what do you guys think a court of law is? A court, a federal court.
Right. Right.
Once a judge makes a court order ruling,
it's done, baby.
Another court order has to come and supersede that. Otherwise, it's the law.
That's right. That's right.
I told them that, you know, yeah. and I give them the documents where they can read it for themselves. Because what I did was in California, I went to the FBI, I went to the DOJ because I wanted to put these people in jail. The FBI are just like they're white collar policemen, just like the ones that you have on the blue collar. The ones that we work with every day, they're blue collar cops. The FBI is white collar cops. And it's a certain money that they handle. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
The FBI go up into
up to a certain limit.
Millions and the billions. Right. And then, you know, the blue collar goes up into certain amounts of money.
Right.
And so I went to the FBI, coming from law enforcement and being a prodigy. I know all of the law and stuff because I specialize in RICO law, which is criminal law.
Yes, it is.
I do tax laws. I do copyright and trademark and patent law. I do copyright and entertainment. I also do like a corporative law and federal procedure law, which mean I can go into any federal courts and besides state and city is easy. But I always go to federal because the judges are nominated by presidents and, you know, they're elected, you know, they're put in, they're not elected like the state and the city. You can buy those state and city judges and whoever pay for their election owns them. But the federal, they die out of their jobs. Either they're arrested or they die out of the job. You can Google right now and see some of them drugged out of the courtroom. You can Google right now and see the feds coming in and arresting them right in the courtrooms because they don't come to your house and do it in secrecy. Yeah. They got to embarrass you.
Right. They do it in front of everybody.
Right. So I told them I was going to the feds coming from a law enforcement family and they investigated. They came back and gave me all the paperwork and everything on it. And the U.S. Attorney's Office is the one that double crossed me.
Oh.
Meg Diamond and Elizabeth Ann Stevens, the prosecutor, they were supposed to prosecute these people. And of course, they got paid off, not, you know, because that's what happened with Bernie Madoff. That's what happened with Whitey Bulger. His brother was a senator. Diplomatic immunity, power. His best friend was an FBI director. Come on.
Right. Yeah.
In order to get Whitey Bulger, they had to make his brother step down. His FBI friend, he killed somebody. They put him in prison. And Whitey was on the run, he and his girlfriend. And they caught up with him in Santa Monica, put him in jail. And he, of course, they said he died as a snitch. But Al Capone paid, you know, remember the Untouchables? Remember
of seeing yeah.
Walter Winchell reporting yeah. it, where the police commissioner would call up and say, hey, Al, we're going to hit up three of your places tonight. Make sure you're not there. We got to make it look to the public like we're doing our job.
Right.
Because if you're there, we're going to have to arrest you.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what did his little CPA do, his little accountant? He said, you know, Al wasn't racketeering. He wasn't killing nobody. He wasn't robbing and drug trading and blah, blah, blah. He had legitimate companies. And they said, well, if he had legitimate companies, he's not going to pay any taxes.
Right.
So we can't get him on racketeering. We can't get him for murder, but we can get him for tax evasion.
They use money. They use numbers.
Yeah.
Yes. And look at Bernie Madoff. Bernie was stealing from multimillionaires and billionaires. Mm-hmm. From actors. 20 to 30 years. Yeah. Listen, from 20 to 30 years. Come on, fellas.
I know, right?
The rich people are the first ones to scream if you take a dollar from them.
Yes. Yes, they are.
But they're not getting any relief. But the sun tails on him. And of course, they fake the, you know, like he committed suicide. But we know they killed him.
Yeah.
And his father is 65 years old. He goes to prison. He gets 150 years and die in prison.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. But most people don't even know this about, you know, these people, these untouchables. That's why they're called untouchables, because they're paying to stay out of jail.
That's it. Yeah. It's all about the money at the end of the day, right?
That's right. Billionaires. I mean, look, Al Capone dies of syphilis after being in prison for 40 years. Come on. He doesn't get prosecuted for all the crimes and murders he did.
Mm-hmm. You say, just stealing money.
Going to jail for tax evasion. Give me a break.
Yeah, right. For not giving the government their cut.
Right.
That was the thing that they were so pissed off about.
Of course, restitution for RICO. You know, RICO, that's big restitution money. That's criminal restitutions that is in the millions. You know, for him, it's in the millions. But today's value, it would be in the billions because, you know, you got to realize he was in the 20s and the 30s and the 40s. Right. Yes, of course.
Inflation, man.
Inflation. Yeah, because inflation. People would come up to me and they say, well, why aren't they in jail? I said, come on, guys.
You cannot have
studied the history of all these untouchables that don't realize they're paying to stay out of jail. Are you kidding me or something?
Right.
Are we both in the United States or are you some other country?
Mm-hmm.
Because all of them are untouchables. That's why they're called untouchables. Because they're paying. And guess what? The moment they stop paying, they go to jail. Do you notice that?
That's right.
That's right.
Of course. That's right.
Yeah. But the people don't even pay attention, you know, and they're hiding a lot of stuff because public opinion matters. The moment the public finds out that something is wrong, they will bitch and scream and holler. Just like in the arena. Remember in the... Mm-hmm. The arena with the Romans, the gladiators, they be like, you know, hey, it's either hey, you know, or it's that, you know?
Exactly.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so all these lawsuits, after all said and done, the last lawsuit, the one that you overcame and finally, you know, were able to defeat these people.
Let me tell you. The first lawsuit was about RICO. I initiated a RICO lawsuit because when I got double crossed and I see that the U.S. attorneys wasn't going to put them in jail, I understand my rights under the Constitution. Mm-hmm. I understand my rights that we can do citizen arrest. We can take care of stuff ourselves if we don't get justice from those we put into position to get justice. Mm-hmm. We can do it ourselves. I initiated a RICO case. Now, this is where I made a mistake because the FBI told me, they said, since it went across state lines, the theft went all over the globe, I could have filed, the venue could have been anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me the most crooked lawyers and judges were in California. But at that time when I filed, I was living in Utah at that time because my brothers then were stationed at Hill Air Force Base. They had invited me there, coming from New York to there. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't think about the Mormons, but that would have been the ideal place. But I wasn't thinking about mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. I filed in Cali because I knew, you know, they were all there in Cali and I could get them all in one spot. So I filed April 23rd or 24th, 2003. Mm-hmm. Yes, I filed in 2003, April 24th, 2003. And I went and saw the judge. Now, this is going to blow your mind. The late Johnny Cochran came and asked for my court case. I got a chance to meet him. Can you believe that?
Wow.
His publicist is the one that introduced us. She had investigated me. She had heard about me. And she hooked it up because I had gone to the New York law firm and I had asked, well, can Johnny Cochran take my case? And a lady named Ogilvy, who worked for him, she told me, she said, if Johnny wants your case, he has to call for it. Mm-hmm. And many years later, we had that reminiscing of her telling me that, and then Johnny coming and calling for my case. Sometimes his father would recommend cases to him, but mm-hmm. he actually called for my case, and he was just super. I mean, he was my hero. You know, when I was younger and studying law and everything, my family would call me Ms. Johnny Cochran. And I mean, I love that. Do you know what I'm talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, of course. Like yeah.
Comparing
yeah.
me with Johnny Cochran, but I was a female mm-hmm. version of him.
Yeah.
And so it was mind boggling. He was like my hero. You know what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. here he was, you know, and he was so nice, just very humility, humble and a sweet, nice, wonderful person. And, you know, he asked me, what was my judge? And I said, my judge is Terry J. Hatter Jr. And he said, well, he and some other guys told me, well, Hatter will bend over backwards and make sure you get justice. Because Hatter is a good judge. You know, I got a good judge. And I initiated the RICO and I had to go see him. And I went and saw him. And he told me, he said, look, Sophia, if you can answer these 20 questions, I will grant the RICO case to go forward. And, you know, of course, I can answer the 20 questions he gave me a piece of cake.
Right.
And so they knew that they were going to go to jail because I had all this evidence and paper, the paper trail. Mm-hmm. And I was prolific in law. So they sent four law firms to sabotage me. They sent a RICO law firm. His name was Dean Webb. They sent a Beverly Hills and Hidden Hills. This guy had two law firms, Michael Stoller. Mm-hmm. Then a Pasadena law firm, Gary Brown. And then, of course, the late Jonathan LaBelle, New York law firm. Now, mm-hmm. I would have never in my wildest dream think that all four of them were going to sabotage me. I thought maybe one or two or three, mm-hmm. but not all four of them. But all four of them were sent by Warner Brothers to sabotage the California case.
Wow.
You know how they did it?
How?
One little simple thing. All I had to put in was the movies. I didn't have to put in the copyrights. I didn't have to put in the books. I didn't have to put in the scripts. All I had to do was put in the movies. The movies and the book and the copyrights are all one and the same.
Right.
And Judge Morrow said in her ruling that all they had to do, my attorneys, was to put in the movies, and that's a wrap. You know, my attorneys did an affidavit that you guys, if you look at docket 282, the evidence, Michael Stoll is admitting they went out and got the movies and told him he thought Warner Brothers was going to put them in. Now, that doesn't make a lick of sense. Why would the opposition put in and cut their own heads off?
Right.
You say?
Yeah.
And they got rid of Hatter. Let me tell you how they got rid of Hatter. Hatter's son was an attorney. They hired his son, which is a conflict of interest. Because the judge's son works for the defendants.
Yeah.
So he had to recuse himself from the case.
Yeah, so the judge had to recuse. The good judge. And then Margaret Morrow, she should have recused herself. Come on. She used to work for Warner Brothers. And one of my lawyers, Jonathan LaBelle, the late John, she was working with him.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
Yeah, and this was obviously in, you know, in the record, business records.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So but they were I'm going to tell you something that's going to be mind-boggling to you.
Please, please.
They were a Scientologist.
Oh.
People that I went up against, the studios and all of them, they were Scientologists. And Howard Hughes' lawyers, they were Mormon lawyers. And they came to me and they told me they were Scientologists and that they were the only ones to beat the Scientologists. Mm. They told me to hire them, but I couldn't trust anybody at that point.
Right, yeah.
So I hired some local yokels in Utah, which would give me enough time while I'm doing interviews and I'm doing a lot of media stuff and speaking, and will give me time to come in there and do my own case.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So then you had a second case in Utah, correct?
Yes, and that's where I won. Yes. I won on September the 25th, 2014. I got the two bad judges that they had sabotaging me. I got them recused off their case. Now, this is going to blow your mind. It was a woman judge. Her name was Brooke Wales. And there was a male judge, and his name was Clark Wadoffs.
Mm.
Now, God told me to write this brief on them and expose them. And in it, he told me to name her as a cheap prostitute, to call Wales a cheap prostitute, and to call Wadoff a Grandmaster Ku Klux Klansman.
Wow. Jeez.
Yeah, but call her a cheap prostitute that sold her soul for money. And I wrote it in there. He told me don't show anyone. No one could help me with my legal briefs. Nobody could even see them until I filed the documents into the courts. And God had me to mark it in red. Once you mark in red, nothing can cross that line of the red. That's the blood. Or you guys know the Passover? When their doors was marked with the blood, the death angel had to pass over because nothing can cross over that, the blood, the red.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So
the blood of the innocent.
God had me to mark all my papers with red ink because that way they would never get lost. They would never get stolen, hidden, blocked. Nothing could happen to them. When you mark with the red, go back in school. Whenever the teacher...
They always say, no, don't mark in red.
That's right. When she, it was a final grade.
Right.
And it could not be changed or altered. Right. Now, if she did blue, a black ink, or the pen, or the pencil, the black chalk, she would change those grades. Because a lot of the laws I knew of God, and I utilized those laws because... Those laws are unalterable, unchangeable. Nothing can break the laws. Once you learn the laws of God and not the laws of man, man's laws changes every day. Like he changes his mind, he changes his wife, he changes his car, changes his house. They're in a constant fluke of change over and over. Mm-hmm. So nothing is ever settled. Or that's right, or final. But God's laws are unalterable, unchangeable. They're here, now, and forever. And once you learn those laws and you apply them, nothing can shake those laws. Nothing can alter, come in. And this is what I used in the courts.
Really?
That's right. And so guess what? Because I fired my attorney. And he wanted to quit because he was all scared and they were getting paid off by Warner Brothers and they were all scared. He was scared he was going to go to prison. Mm-hmm. And the judges, court ordered him to stay on because the crooked judges can only win a lawsuit through crooked lawyers.
That's right.
They got to have some lawyers as, you know, puppets, mouthpieces.
In their pocket.
That's right, because otherwise they're impartial. They, you know, they only have so much power. They only have so much, you know, room to maneuver.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's right. Or manipulate.
Yeah.
And so guess what? One of the people, his name is Skip Belcher. He worked with the judges. He worked with law enforcement. And he was reading the legal briefs. He's like, oh, my God, they're going to get you. They're going to come after you. They're going to get you, you know, for contempt. Or something, because, you know, they can get you for contempt, because the lady judge was a magistrate judge, and the other one was a federal judge, Wadoff.
Mm-hmm.
So the federal judge is very powerful. The magistrate judge, they can put you in jail. As soon as you discover a crime that you committed while you're on the witness stand, you can go to jail instantly. But with a federal judge on the bench, he'll tell you, plead the, you know, the fifth and just go get you a lawyer and work it out. But the magistrate judge, he'll put you, or he will put you in jail immediately. They don't have no heart. They're the most dangerous judge to be on the bench. And she was the magistrate judge on the bench. And Wadoff was the federal. And he was talking to me, Skip Belcher. And he's like, oh, my God, they're going to get you. They're going to get you. I'm reading this legal brief. This is crazy what you said about the judges. And everybody is reading it because it's public information now. Guess what? The phone rings. This is God. This is how you know God exists. The phone rings and I answer it and he could hear it. It's on speaker. And it's an attorney over from Salt Lake City, Utah. He's reading the legal brief and he's cracking up. And he says to me, how did you know? And I said, what? He said, how did you know? I said, how did I know what? He said, how did you know she was a cheap prostitute? Because she sucked my Johnson. Wow. She sucked her way to the top. Here's the validation from God.
Here's
the validation from God. And Skip Belcher is like, oh my God. You know, he's like blown away. This guy is validating it. Mm. You know what I'm saying? He said, she doesn't know anything about law. She's got a full-fledged lawyer, Matthew Jones, doing all of her casework. And we were like, what?
Hmm.
You know, that's unheard of.
That's incredible.
So she was just a lawyer on paper and she was having
some. She wasn't even a lawyer.
Wow.
She didn't even know how to work. She didn't even go to judge school for 3 years. Hmm. See, a judge is supposed to go to judge school for 3 years.
Right.
And they're supposed to be at least a lawyer, know some law. Not saying that it's detrimental that you can't get elected or get nominated or whatever to go in there, but you got to know something. But here was this lawyer, Matthew Jones, doing everything, all the whole caseloads. He was the acting judge.
Wow.
And there, here it is, validated, and Skip Belcher is blown away. But God would validate for me all the time. And it would blow his mind because he did not miss a hearing. He didn't miss a court case. He didn't miss anything. It just blew his mind. And I'm showing him that God is real. Are you kidding me? There's no way I can say these things about these people. They're in very high positions. They're very powerful. It talks about these people when they say you're not going up against flesh and blood. You're going against principalities, you're going against powers and authorities and higher places. And if people don't understand that, you're dealing with powers that are ruling in different segments of this earth. But I'm already taught this at 7, 8, and 9 years old by the Illuminatis. And if you think the Illuminatis are not real, you're crazy, because they are steadily trying to recruit people. And I know some of you might have received letters from them. Am I right? Or you know somebody who has received letters where they were recruiting?
I have. I don't know if they were the real ones, you know? And, you know,
well, it's you don't
a lot
know
of trickery out there.
Listen, you don't know until you sign the contract, right?
Yeah.
Think about that for a moment. Mm-hmm. No one ever knows until they sign the contract. And look what I said. Sign the contract. What does the devil get you to do? Sign a contract. What are they asking you to do? They're asking you to sign a contract. Mm-hmm. They're not coming after you for nothing. Mm-hmm. What would it serve a purpose of them being trickery of coming? They must know something about you because the bloodlines are real. The bloodlines. See, there are no white and black people. That doesn't even exist. That's all bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Great.
There's only the bloodlines.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Obama's bloodline. His mother is English. And his bloodline is from all of these people and these presidents. They all go to one.
Yeah, he's related to Bush. Isn't he like a cousin of Bush?
Because they all have these bloodlines.
Yeah.
You don't become a billionaire here on earth or a multimillionaire or someone in a position that the whole world is looking at you unless you have those bloodlines. And I would tell people, give me your blood and I'll tell you who you are. You tell me your blood type and I'll tell you exactly who you are and where you came from and what your whole background. And there is nothing but tribes, tribal. There, look, go in the Bible, they're talking about the tribes. We're talking about the Philistines. We're talking about the Armenians. We're talking about tribes. Come on.
That's true. That is true. So
the Babylonians, you know, the Greeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all tribal because look at the word racist, racist. There are no races. The word race is racist. The word race is racism.
Mm-hmm.
That is, there is no African Americans and no Italian Americans and no Greek Americans. That doesn't, that's just talking about a land that you're in, a nation.
Mm-hmm.
That ain't talking about your skin, it's nothing but a biological cover.
That's right.
That's all it is. Biological cover has nothing to do with who you are.
Nope. That I agree with 100%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why people are. Well, I do kind of know because their program, these are distractions.
Yes.
It's part of it. It's part of what's being put out there because it's really easy to argue about when it's actually nonsensical and kind of hides the problems in which we should be talking about. It's really easy to talk about color of skin because it's really easy to see where that's the difference. When in reality, that doesn't tell you where differences lie or where similarities are. It has nothing to do with that, anything.
Exactly.
People are people. You got to interact with them on an individual basis to find out who they are and what they're like.
Period. And find out who's inside of the transportation.
Correct.
Because so God said his children were 3D, three-dimensional beings.
Right.
And you see the period that a woman has. Look, what is it? It's water. It's blood. It's, you know, it's blood, water, and spirit. The astral body.
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm talking about? The second body is the physical body that takes 9 months or 36 weeks to grow inside of the matrix womb. The third body is the seed or the soul that attaches at the 12th week, you know, at the 12th week. And if a doctor performed an abortion at the 12th week, it's killing a living soul.
Mm-hmm.
Because the soul is the seed of continuation because God's children come back again and again. And you know that whatever God has created is it has a seed. Because look, when you eat into an apple, it has the seeds, you spit it out, it's going to go down the river, go down the lane, or get into the ground. It's going to sprout these apple trees everywhere. Everything, and when it's seedless and soulless, it's the lab rat.
Mm-hmm.
It's a living organism, but you don't even know what the hell you're eating. The dogs and the insects and the animals are looking at you like, are you crazy? You better eat that. You don't even know what you're eating. It's ugly. They see what you're eating. Now, your brains is telling you, well, I'm eating a seedless watermelon. Well, I'm eating a seedless grape. I'm eating a seedless orange. You know, your mind is telling you that, and it looks just like that, you know?
Yeah. But it was genetically modified. Right.
Right. GMOs.
Right.
Genetically modified, you know, or, you know, organisms.
Correct.
You know, Yep. But the dogs and the insects and the animals is looking at you. You're crazy. They won't even touch it. Have you ever noticed that? You put something that man has created out of the lab, the dog is like, y'all are crazy. I'm not eating that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But this is appealing. This looks delicious.
Yeah, but it's not real at the end of the day. So
yeah,
at the end of the day, at the end of this lawsuit, talk to us what happened. You know, you regain, you know, the rights and ownership of this.
No. I've always had
the but in the eyes of the courts.
I was always selling Matrix and Terminator. Come on now. I can't go sell no Apple. I can't go sell no Microsoft. I can't go sell no Nike because the feds will come out and arrest me.
That's right.
So
that's
how
right.
am I selling Matrix and Terminator and nobody is bothering me?
That's the $1 million question, Sophia. Because you won.
That's right. I won in the court. The judge validated that everything I said in my amended complaint was factual, was fact, was true.
Mm.
Now, come on, you can't. And both judges, the master judge and the federal judge, sign off on it. Evelyn J. First, federal judge D. Benson. Court orders. You can look at the documents. I can send it to anybody. Go on my website and matrixterminator.com and look at it. Written 4 books on Matrix and Terminator. Sail around the entire world. do speaking engagements, do, you know, go out and, you know, interviews, paid interviews everywhere, licensing deals, no problems. Not getting any threats. The feds say, are these people bothering you? Are they threatening you? Because we have to come out and arrest them if they do.
Have you got your money back, Sophia?
Of course. I won in the courts. You know what I'm saying? I won in the courts.
It's amazing that you were able to, you know, of course, you know, overcome this in the court system. And now, in their eyes, you are the owner. You've always have been. Looking back.
Well, see, because in the courts, I was in there for the damages, you know, because right. What happened was I won 2 default judgments. You guys need to know that.
Yes.
The first one I won, they were hiding the fact that Jonathan LaBelle was dead. I only had 1 contract and it was 4 law firms, but the other 3 law firms was hired by Jonathan LaBelle. So they were his agents.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm talking about?
I like how you use that word, agents.
Yeah, they were his agents because we only signed the 1 contract and they were all under that contract.
Right.
So when I got him, I got them also. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. And so I had put in for $150 million. And, you know, a judge can't knock that down. Only Jonathan LaBelle could knock that down. But this is going to blow you guys' mind. The courts and everybody knew that Jonathan LaBelle was dead. And they kept the charade going while the man was dead.
Kind of like a Weekend at Bernie's kind of thing.
Wow, I was just thinking Weekend at Bernie's. That's terrible.
Yeah, he's alive.
That's what we called it.
Yeah.
Would you believe we called it the Weekend? Because that was a big show going on.
Yeah, that was a big movie. Yeah,
at the time when Jonathan LaBelle was dead and they were using him. And they was using his name on all kind of court cases and everything while the man was dead. And this is default judgment 219. Listen carefully.
Yep.
Default 219. Do you remember me sending that to you guys?
Yes, I have that. Yeah.
Yeah. And the judge came back and said they're going to give me the money later on. Didn't y'all read that?
Yeah, I got that part. Yeah, that's why I wanted to talk about it.
And I'm still waiting for that $150 million from that judge. $150 million because Jonathan LaBelle was dead and he couldn't object. So they owe me $150 million. Now, I want a second default judgment against Warner Brothers for $317,000. Do you remember that? They put a lien on me.
Yeah.
Saying that I owed them money from the California court case.
Right.
That they were the owners.
Mm-hmm.
And I put them through hell. So therefore, I should pay the attorney fees.
And
they put a lien on me illegally. So the judge ruled that, hey, Sophia Stewart is the owner and creator of Matrix and Terminator. So you guys need to pay that. Now that's docket 288,
right? That's the one that you said.
Second default judgment.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to ask you, because a lot of people don't understand the legal logistics behind your case. You know what I mean? And I'm glad you're able to put it out there and really like encompass this whole thing together. And I wanted to make sure I covered that because I want to make sure people understand that you know that you did succeed in court and were able to succeed in court. You know, and you know, it's a big thing right now with people, you know, on the internet, they say a lot of different things, but when they don't really do their research properly and they just see maybe, you know, a 15 or 20 second, you know, short film or short on Instagram or maybe on Facebook,
they say a real
gospel. Yeah, they take it for gospel.
They see a real and they think it's real.
Yeah. And so that's why I wanted really to kind of clear the air and make sure that people really understood that you are the creator of these things. You know, you are. And we thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We really do. There's one question I wanted to ask you. You know, since these two films have had
I didn't cover the liens, remember?
Oh, the liens. I'm sorry. Let's talk about the liens real quick, please.
Well, you know, Judge Joe Brown did a show and I was on his show.
That's right.
And he said the liens were good as gold. And what people didn't realize was, I'm going to make it quick and short because I want to hear your question.
Yeah.
They had tried to prevent me from getting any money. And so they would not show up. None of the defendants would show up in the courtroom. None of them, because they was going to get arrested. There was 4 or 5 FBI agents and bailiffs with guns on waiting for them to show up. Their mouthpiece did not show up because they would be arrested for them because they spoke for them. So they didn't show up. They didn't have no witnesses. I had three CPAs. They told me they were going to be racist towards me. They actually said it. They were going to be racist towards me, that I could not use any newspaper clippings on how much money was made by the defendants, Warner Brothers and all of them, the studios. They said I could. They let other people use it in Utah before. They let them use newspaper clippings. They let them use magazines or whatever. They said I could not use none of it. They said I had to have expert witnesses. Expert witnesses are $25,000 a piece.
Oh, yeah.
God showed up and showed out. He sent me three CPAs. One flew in from California, a Asian guy, Japanese, Art Tessima, and then a Black lady from Utah, CPA, and an Italian guy from Utah, CPA. You can find their names in the transcript. They got on the witness stand and said that I was owed $4.11 billion.
Jeez, wow.
$4.11 billion. You got to listen, $4.11 billion. Now, the little Asian CPA was paid by them to drop a bomb, so I could not get any damages. He told Judge Evelyn J. First that Warner Brothers lost $500 million, $500 million. How can you lose $500 million when the Matrix only cost $70 million to make, and ABC said it made in excess of $1 billion. You can go back and look at the ABC interviews. Go back and look at the news.
I recall it. I know. There. I remember it. Yeah. No, I recall all that.
Yeah. It said it made $1 billion. So what I could have objected to the judge and said, Your Honor, he's my witness. He's my expert witness that I'm paying for. So he cannot testify for one of us, but I needed his testimony. You know why? Because they were paying out slush fund payoffs. They gave Mitt Romney $1 billion to run for president, to run under Obama. They paid Boehner to stab him in the back. They paid Eric Holder to keep him from prosecuting any cases for 7 years, the whole 7 years he was in. He never prosecuted, not one case.
Yeah, that's true.
And I wrote in the legal briefs that Warner Brothers supplied the slush fund payoffs to the trademark office, Deborah Cohen's, to Boehner, and to Eric Holder. Guess what? I sent it up to Obama. And immediately when I called the White House, I said, did Obama get my paperwork? They said, what is the tracking number? I gave them the tracking number and bam, everything started changing in that court. Eric Holder is crying the day I win the lawsuit. He's fired. September 25th, 2014. Go back and look at it. He's crying. Deborah Cohen lose her job over at the trademark. September the 9th, 2014. Days before the win. Boehner. Boehner loses his job as House Speaker.
House Speaker.
September the 25th, 2015. A year later. And I was able, God told me to put the liens in. Put the liens in, and guess what? I leaned up all of their properties and their companies and their homes and everything, and their holding companies with money, the whole nine yards. Did you see the liens?
Oh, yeah. I saw the liens. I thought that was very interesting. That was very eye-opening, in my opinion, because it shows right there. It shows right there a lot of who was involved as well, because it shows like the spider web of people that were really entwined in this whole thing. And it's really amazing, Sophia. I mean, the success and the cultural impact of both the Terminator and the Matrix franchises, I'm sure you have to be proud of in some ways, right? Of course, right?
Very much, because look how it changed the whole world.
It did. It did.
Waking up the conscience of people that would never thought they would be conscious. And guess what? I'm talking about technology that hasn't even come upon the earth yet, that started to come when I'm talking about it in my interviews.
Yeah.
I was talking about Apple before Apple even came, and I can tell you where it's going in the future. I'm talking about virtual reality in another way with the visors and everything, making a Matrix attraction. The stuff is mind-boggling. The technology in my books from the 80s, even Homeland Security had to call me. They even told me I solved the Roswell incident. You think I'm joking, but I'm not.
No, I
they
believe you.
The
I
Matrix
believe you.
That's... 4 book, and they said, oh my God, you solved the Roswell. Look, Roswell happened with the aliens before I was even born. Mm-hmm. So it was mind-boggling to me. How did I solve the Roswell incident? I asked them. They said they did not know how those UFOs flew until they read Matrix 4 book. Page 77 and on.
Hmm.
They were like, how did you know how those ships flew? Because in there, I'm describing how these alien ships flew with magnetic ring pulses in the reversal of gravity, how the machines can't detect them, and how they, you know, like take a balloon, for instance, say a balloon with air in it is actually, something doesn't want you guys to hear this about the UFO.
That's funny. I was just saying that to William.
And Roswell. Listen, you know, because I never have any problems until it's something that they don't want somebody to hear or know
right.
about.
But you, of course,
do you see how crazy it was trying to shut my whole phone off?
Oh, is that
you
what it was
where,
doing?
You know, yeah, you know where the deal comes on?
Yeah.
Where the emergency thing and it right. shuts your phone off?
Yeah, yeah.
They tried to shut my phone off about 3 or 4 times.
Somebody don't like what you're talking about, Sophia. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some because agents. I got to tell you all about the Roswell deal. You got to hear
yeah,
this.
Yeah. Uh-oh. So, yes.
This is really important.
Yes.
Like I told you, Roswell happened before I was even born.
Right.
So this is blowing my mind. And they send me classified information from the Pentagon, which I'm going to share with you guys. They said, I solved the Roswell incident. I said, what do you mean I solved the Roswell? Because I wasn't even born when it happened. They said, well, how did you know how those UFOs were flying? Because I got the same UFOs. It has Egyptian hieroglyphics under the belly of the ship. And they captured, they sent me the documents where they captured the ships. They broke them down by aerodynamics. You can see how the breakdown. But they didn't know how they flew until they read The Matrix 4. Now, you guys got to realize, I'm thinking that I'm making all this technology up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I'm the creator of the technology. Do you see what I'm saying? In my mind, I'm the creator. I'm not knowing that this stuff is real. Do you
right.
understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But I know all of this stuff. And I'm like, well, I created those ships because underneath them, they have the magnetic ring pulsions. Look, they got the magnetic ring pulsions and they're pulsating. Now, imagine a balloon is a UFO.
Mm-hmm.
And you all of a sudden, you untie it. And all of a sudden, you untie it and the air comes out of it and it shoots out like this.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't even see the balloon until it lands. Where did it go? Because remember, you took the air out, but when you took the air out, it's gone. Well, that's the same process when you have magnetic ring pulsion. Mm-hmm. You know, the reversal of gravity.
Reverse gravity.
You just
right.
reverse the gravity in the balloon. It's the same process with the UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you see us going into the gas station and we're getting gas and putting in our cars. We're lined up, you know, all, you know, and just lining up. Sometimes we talk to each other. Sometimes we don't.
Mm-hmm.
We get the gas, we shoot on, we leave. Well, imagine all these UFOs from all over the galaxies. There's some that look like jellyfish. There's some that look neon. There's some that you can see right inside of the ship. Some look like old upside down houses. Look like all kind of things. They're going to the grids, the longitude, latitude, and they're looking for magnetism. Mm. They're looking for, that's what the magnetic pulsion is, magnetism. Mm-hmm. And on the ley line is this magnetism. This is why you don't see UFOs in certain areas where living beings are, because the living beings, we eat up the magnetic energy. We're with magnetism, our bodies,
mm-hmm.
you see? So they go over Peru, they go over the Amazon. You see more UFOs in certain places. Like you see a lot here in Vegas. I've seen some here in Vegas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I was blown away and I called the station and they said, well, we see UFOs all the time here. Like, are you kidding us? Going to yeah. Area 51.
Right.
But I didn't even know that. But I'm showing the process and I'm breaking down the technology, and they are going crazy because they didn't even know that the ships flew like that until I broke down the technology.
Well, you're obviously tapping into some higher frequency, whether you know it or not, Sophia.
Well, all I think of that's it is why... tapping in. Listen, the Matrix, the Terminator, come on. Yeah. I'm not talking about metal clankety clank. Right. That's H.G. Wells. That's right. All the Star Wars. They're got the old metal robots. I'm introducing organism covered in flesh, looking like us. I'm talking about clones, drones, test tube
transhumanism.
Come on. They just named the over there in the Arab countries. What is she? The first AI, Sophia.
Sophia, yeah.
Yeah, they named her Sophia because they know that I'm the one that created all of this stuff. And guess what? When a guy was interviewing me, like, you guys, a radio station, he says, oh, my God, Sophia, you're not going to believe this because I can see who are listening to your interviews. He said, all of the politicians over in Washington, D.C., and all the politicians are listening to your interviews.
Well, let's see if we light up those lights when we release this episode next week. So I'll let you know.
Well, come on. You got to know. You haven't read the Third Eye book yet, right?
Oh, yeah, I have. Yeah, I've read that already. Yeah.
I have not. I'll be honest.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to it.
Well, have y'all read Matrix 4 book yet?
No, that one I ordered from you just recently, yesterday. Remember?
Oh, my God. But it's got all the new technology that's in it.
Oh, I know. I'm looking forward to that. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, because the Third Eye book has the technology, and I'm talking about a lot of technology concept that they don't even know what the hell I'm talking about yet.
Sophia, where can everybody find your book? So that way, if they're interested, which I'm sure a lot of people will be after this interview.
They need to, to MatrixTerminator.com, MatrixTerminator.com. But I'm on other distribution platforms.
Please.
People in the foreign countries or whoever your choice, go to Amazon.com. Go to Barnes and Nobles. I'm selling all over on many platforms and get the books. I mean, go right now, there's over 1,000 book reviews on Amazon right now. My three books are on there, but I got four books. Mm-hmm. They're in ebooks. People, you need to get this book. You need to get these more Matrix.
Yes, absolutely.
See why Warner Brothers offered me $30 million for the shooting script to Matrix 4 book.
Mm-hmm.
I got the shooting script too, ready to go.
Uh-oh.
I got the shooting script ready to go for anybody out there that want to get that script. $30 million. Come on, the James Bond script went for $50 million.
This is
the Matrix. We're talking about more Matrix. We're talking about incredible technology that you guys have not even seen on any movie screen yet.
The next evolution.
When you read the book, you're going to see why they offered me $30 million for the shooting script.
Unbelievable. Sophia, this has been an unbelievable story. I mean, this whole journey that you've been through, I thank you so much for coming on our podcast and sharing this whole thing, this whole trilogy, this whole thing that you've been on, this journey. And it's just amazing. We really appreciate it. Again, you can find all the books on Terminator and website again?
More Matrix and more Terminator. Matrix Evolution. Mm-hmm. The continuations of the Matrix, more Matrix and Terminator in that book. Mm-hmm. The first, where it all began, the Third Eye Matrix and Terminator book, the first one.
Yep.
The Matrix trivia book, and the Mother of the Matrix, which is telling a story about the court cases and about what was going on behind closed doors and in the media and all the trolls and stuff. So get the books and become educated, because what they came out with was not the Matrix.
Uh-oh.
2021 movie Matrix regurgitation, resuscitation, resurrection. That is not the Matrix. People was asking for their money back.
Right. Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Come on, people.
Yeah. Yep.
Let's get it right.
Absolutely. Yes. Well, Sophia, thank you again for coming on our podcast and being a guest and a wonderful guest at that. And we appreciate you taking your time to talk to us and spread the truth about the Matrix and the Terminator series. And we really appreciate it. And you can find all her books again, what was the website, Sophia?
MatrixTerminator.com, just like the franchises, MatrixTerminator.com or TruthAboutMatrix.com. Google Sophia Stewart's website, it'll pop up.
There you go.
You can find it. Just put in Sophia Stewart and all my stuff will come up.
The owner and creator of the Matrix and Terminator series, Ms. Sophia Stewart, thank you so
much.
Mother, yes, of
Mother of that's... every woman is the mother of her womb. I'm just not Mother Nature, but
yeah.
Hey,
no, mother of these wonderful stories.
That's for sure. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Have a great night. Thank you. All right.
Good night.
Dark Fringe Radio, your premier source for the paranormal, conspiracy theory, and true crime.